Since all four bars point in the same direction, either clock or counterclockwise, the form creates an impression of perpetual rotation. The origin of the symbol is unknown. It has been used for thousands of years as a symbol of the sun, of infinity, of continuing recreation, as well as a decorative motif in the Americas, China, Egypt, Greece, Scandinavia, and elsewhere. It has been found in the catacombs of Rome, on textiles of the Inca period, and on relics which were unearthed on the site of Troy. It had always, the magic of the old ones, 213, been considered as a sacred symbol until the time of the Second World War. Adolf Hitler corrupted it when it was transformed and defamed into a symbol of a horrific regime. B. This type of knowledge is needed, and it will be useful for you and for those of your present time. It will remind your people of their origins. Chapter 18. Research. The next step was research. The purpose of this research would be to find similarities between the beliefs and the stories of Tuin's tribe, and present-day Native American beliefs. I had to discover if some of the lore of the Old Ones may have crept into the modern rituals and customs in such a manner that the natives are unaware of their origins. Tuin said the blood of his people and that of the Star people have descended and have been incorporated into the blood of most Indian tribes. My task would be to attempt to trace this theory and see if any remnants of his stories have survived. The logical place to center my research would be the Eskimos and the Native American tribes of Canada. That was where I began, with the help of interlibrary loan at the University of Arkansas. I decided to confine the majority of my research to very old books and magazine articles. During the last 4 or 5 decades, UFOs and extraterrestrials have become household words and are certain to influence any modern person. But if there are suggestions of such things in very old records, then it would have more validity. Thus I chose to concentrate my research on old records before the Native Americans were influenced and contaminated by European culture and missionaries' beliefs. Some of this information was from books so old and fragile that they were only available on microfilm. At one point, I borrowed a portable microfilm reader from the ones I had completed the regressions, 214, research, 215, library. I became bleary-eyed from hours of trying to read archaic print on faded pages, but the results always justify the search. The task of tracing the beginning of human life on our planet is beyond the scope of this book. It will probably be gone into in depth in a future book, as I continue to explore our origins, as connected with our alien ancestors. It will be sufficient to say that the accepted theory of our beginnings is that humanoid types started in Africa, and spread outward from there to all corners of the globe. This chapter will focus on my research concerning the origin of the North American Indian, and the relationship to Tuin's story. I found there is much debate about the origin of the Native American tribes in North America, and I suppose the debate will not be settled anytime soon, as there are still several theories. One of the oldest, and since discredited, is that the Red Man is the degenerate descendant of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. It is generally conceded that the Indian did not originate on the North American continent, but came from somewhere else. Anthropologists are positive that no type of pre-human remains have been found on the northern or southern continent of this hemisphere. Homo sapiens, or modern man, as far as present knowledge stands, is the only humanoid species that has occupied the Americas. This fact, that only remains of biologically modern man have so far been discovered in the New World, indicates that the migrations which populated it took place in the last, or at least the latest, stage in the development of humankind. Humans had become one biological species before the migrations began. Scientific observers have noticed the striking resemblance between the natives of America and Northern Asia. The most popular belief is that they migrated across the Bering Strait during a time in the ancient past when a land bridge, the Miocene Bridge, existed in the area. The great glaciers of the Ice Age captured and held so much water that ocean levels dropped hundreds of feet, exposing land bridges that tied Siberia to North America. At its widest, this bridge stretched 0.0 miles north from the present-day Alaska Peninsula. It was a land that the migrants had to share with mammoths, 216, The Legend of Star Crush, Saber-Toothed Tigers, and Giant Bears. Stone tools were found in Siberia that were identical to those found in Alaska and Western Canada. Scientists believe the immigrants came in three waves. To moved inland, the ancestors of the Native Americans. A third wave, including Eskimos and Aleuts, rimmed the coast. Warming periods the last beginning about 13,000 years ago melted the glaciers and put the bridge back under the Bering Sea. When the bridge disappeared, the people were confined to the Western Hemisphere, and became the first Americans. Cut off from the rest of mankind, they developed their own unique cultures. They survived and thrived by adaptation. The estimated dates for the arrival of the first of a long series of migrations have varied from 12,000 to 18,000 years ago. Some isolated sites hint at peopling 30,000 years ago and earlier. It is believed that the human migrations from Asia probably continued into the 4th century BC. The entire biological journey occurred against the backdrop of the Ice Age, with alternate periods of warm and cold. About 18,000 years ago, the last major glaciation reached its maximum, creating climate and vegetation very different from today's warm interglacial period. This causes me to speculate that Yuin's ancestors must have been firmly established before the Ice Age. The legends indicated that during the time of the Old Ones the climate was warmer, milder. Something very dramatic occurred at that time. It sounded like a comet strike, the earth moved and caused tragic changes. The original inhabitants of the valley, the first ones, seem to be descendants of aborigines who had journeyed there long before the migrations of men from Asia. Or, for the sake of argument, had been deposited there by aliens after the original seeding and development of humans. As indicated in my other books, the humans were distributed throughout the world so they could multiply in various areas. Investigations in archaeology have made it clear that man was distributed throughout the habitable earth at some very remote time, in the very lowest stage of human culture. A study of the languages of the world leads to the conclusion that probably man, Research, 217, was distributed before the development of organized or grammatic speech. This was true of the first ones, because they communicated with their minds. The Eskimos now occupy the entire northern fringe of the American continent. Archaeological excavations in Alaska and Canada show that their culture was not in original condition, but the result of relatively recent population movements and contacts. Migration about 1,000 years ago carried the culture from its place of origin in northern Alaska eastward through northern Canada to Greenland. Excavations indicate there was continuous cultural growth and change over a period of more than 2,000 years, especially around the Bering Strait area. This area was one of the finest hunting territories of the world, and living conditions in general were better than in any other part of the Arctic. Excavations also show that, although the Eskimos were in all practical respects a Stone Age people, they had some knowledge of metal. According to Norse sagas describing the visits of low-century Scandinavian voyagers to the eastern coast of America, the people they encountered did not resemble the present-day inhabitants. The Vikings nicknamed the American natives Skrillingraw Chips, because of their puny appearance. They were described as small and dwarfish in appearance and possessing Eskimo characteristics. The area where the Vikings settled seemed to be farther south than Tuin's people. These Chip people were also extremely violent, repulsing any attempt at settlement, so they do not sound like Tuin's gentle people. But they may have been aborigines similar to the first ones that the Star people found in the valley. In the December 1912 edition of National Geographic, there was the story of the remarkable discovery of a group of blonde Eskimos. They were found in the Arctic area of Victoria Island, which is actually further north than Tuin's Valley, but it could be speculated that some of his ancestors could have migrated there. The area had been considered to be uninhabited, and the natives had never seen white men. Many of them had blonde hair, blue eyes, and a few had reddish beards. The first explanation was that they were a mixture. 218. The Legend of Star Crush, of European and Eskimo blood, because many such hybrids were found eastward to Greenland. Yet the history of this area did not substantiate this theory. These tribes were so isolated that most of them could not have had contact with white men. There were reports that in the 1700s, when missionaries established Christianity in the areas to the east, natives were seen who were quite distinctive from the Eskimos. These people were about 6 feet tall, quite handsome and white-skinned. In the 1600s, when the area was still reportedly free from modern European contact, a sea captain reported two distinct types of natives living peacefully together in the coastal area. One type was very tall, well-built, and fair-complexioned. The other type was much smaller, of olive complexion, well-proportioned, except their legs were short and thick. In 1821, Sir Edward Parry came ashore in Lyon Inlet and found people who had Native American features and complexions as fair as Europeans. They in no way resembled the Eskimos. These natives had never seen Indians or Europeans. More small isolated groups were reported in Repulse Bay, Point Barrow, and Boothia Isthmus during the 1800s. Many similar reports from the time showed the existence of hybrid individuals among various Eskimo tribes. Their distribution was proven to be in unbroken continuity along the entire northern coast of North America, prior to the general corruption of the Eskimo by contact with whites during the past century. There was speculation and suggestion that some of these people could be descendants from Norse explorations in the New World, extending from the 10th to the middle of the 15th centuries. These expeditions were believed to have covered the Greenland coast south of the Arctic Circle, and the shores of the American continent, probably from Baffin Island south to Nova Scotia, and probably Labrador. It is believed that the Norsemen were not exterminated by the Eskimo, but were gradually absorbed by them. It was thought that when some of these groups were rediscovered in the 15th-16th centuries, they had adopted the Eskimo way of life completely, and thus did not know of their ancestry. Research, 219. It was speculated that if the blonde Eskimo are descendants of Norse Greenlander ancestors of 5 centuries before, the Norse strain would have been overwhelmingly diluted through pure Eskimo intermarriages. If such was the case, then one must consider the blondes as a remarkable instance of occasional reversion of types, whereby a passing race gradually resumes the general form of its ancient ancestors. It could also be a case of atavism, the recurrence in a descendant of characteristics of a remote ancestor, or a throwback instead of those of an immediate or near ancestor. This explanation could apply whether those ancestors were Europeans, Vikings, or aliens. It was remarked in the National Geographic article that this discovery presented an intricate racial problem that may well tax the acuteness of American ethnologists for some time. I think if they were aware of the even broader scope of the interbreeding with aliens, it would further confuse them. During the summer of 1991, an accidental find by a group of hikers in the Italian Alps led to the discovery of the oldest and best preserved intact human body ever found. Estimated to be 5,300 years old, the description of the man's clothes and tools sounded as though it could have been our friend Chu In, except that the ancient hunter was found on the wrong continent. Trapped in the ice for all these centuries, the frozen corpse was almost 2,000 years older than King Tut, and gave the scientists an amazing insight into the time period that I estimate Chu In lived. This is considered the most important discovery in modern archaeology. He was assumed to have been a hunter, and died wearing his buckskins and grass cape. His bow and arrows, a copper axe, and other tools were recovered nearby. Very little is known about the people who farmed and hunted in the forests of Europe during the late Neolithic Age. Farming communities spread through Europe 7,000 years ago. The people farmed the clearings and pastured their sheep and oxen in the woods. There was also a semi-nomadic group skilled in hunting, fishing and tracking. The two cultures merged and the practice of farming spread throughout Europe. 220. The legend of Star Crush. The scientists were amazed because the Iceman's clothes and tools clearly showed an unexpected high technology from the late Stone Age. No leather work had ever been found from this period. His deerskin clothes were tanned and expertly sewn. His shoes were cleverly made with many eyelets. and he wore a unique waterproof grass cape that showed considerable skill in the weaving, knotting, and splicing of the grass. Tuin enjoyed weaving and knotting as a solution to boredom during the winter months. The four-inch blade of his copper axe was cast from molten metal poured into a mold, and worked with a hammer. Besides his metal tools, the sheer size of his bow surprised the archaeologists. They said the strength required to pull the bowstring back to firing would have been the same strength needed to lift 90 pounds with one hand. When a similar bow was tested, the arrow blew a hole through a deer's chest cavity from 30 yards away. It exited out the other side and continued going. The amazing thing about this find was that it now gives scientists insights into an era where man was considered to be primitive. They are finding that man has had technology for a much longer period than previously thought. I believe the similarity to Tuin is remarkable, and shows that if such development occurred in Europe, it was also possible on the North American continent during the same time frame. Tuin's people developed from the interbreeding between the Old Ones and the First Ones. They remained isolated in their valley until the coming of early Eskimos, probably during or after one of the several migrations onto our continent. Over the centuries, the absorption and diversification continued, and all these races merged, resulting in many different Native American tribes. By the 1500s, 2 million people were living on the North American continent, speaking some 300 languages. When America was discovered by Europeans, it was inhabited by great numbers of distinct tribes, diverse in languages, institutions, and customs. This fact has never been fully recognized, and writers have too often spoken of the North American Indians as a body, supposing that statements made of one tribe would apply to all. Research 221. Several tribes spoke distinct languages that were wholly different from any known in any other part of the world. This fact led to the conclusion that these tribes had occupied their lands for very long periods without contamination. Some were highly civilized, and showed influences from other cultures. The prehistoric mound builders of Cahokia, in eastern Missouri, had their own Stonehenge, an astronomical observatory consisting of a circle of upright poles. Among the prehistoric ruins of Chico Canyon in New Mexico, a large, partially underground, circular ceremonial chamber was discovered. It was so constructed that on the day of the summer solstice, and on that day only, a shaft of light shone through a slit in its stone wall. Burial mound builders like the Natchez practiced an elaborate death cult with pyramids for the dead. The ruler was buried with material treasures, as well as women and servants, dispatched to serve him in the next world. Most of these wonderful cultures were destroyed by methods similar to those employed in the destruction of the ancient Mayan and Incan civilizations. The early missionaries and explorers in the late 1500s set out to destroy the old cultures. In converting natives to the new religion, they had to eliminate the old. Some myths and traditions were absorbed and Christianized, while others merely went underground. Entire tribes became extinct or were absorbed through 16th–18th centuries. The effects of European culture on many regions was devastating, with whole bodies of Native American literature erased, or warped beyond recognition. Where legends endured, they did so fiercely. When Tuin drew the picture of the type of houses his people lived in, I thought it was very similar to log cabins used by early settlers. I discovered during my research that this type of construction was widely used by certain Native American tribes before the coming of Europeans. Englishmen finally settled on the Virginia coast in 1607. They admired the practicality of the log structures and adopted this type of construction. Log cabins then became the favorite habitations of English-descended frontiersmen. The rapid progress in the settlement and occupation of their 222, the legend of Stark Rush, country resulted in the gradual displacement of the Native American tribes, so that a great many were removed from their ancient homes. Some were incorporated into other tribes, and some were absorbed into the body of civilized people. Many, the majority, were removed from their traditional lands and resettled in an area totally remote from their homelands. This has led to erroneous confusion and the combining of tribe names and traditions. It is very difficult to follow any tribe through post-Columbian times, let alone pre-Columbian. Centuries of intimate contact with modern man has had much influence on the pristine condition of the tribes. Speedy and radical changes occurred. For example, the introduction of the horse in the Native American cultures made some dramatic changes in the way the plains tribes hunted and conducted their warfare. Migrations and enforced removals placed tribes into strange environments where new customs and adjustments were necessary. It soon became difficult to discriminate between what was primitive and what was acquired from civilized humanity. By the 1700s, trade was occurring between the Native Americans and the Europeans. The price was dear, for besides the new goods, there came new and fatal diseases: measles, smallpox, cholera, and a variety of fevers, wiping out hundreds and even thousands of people at one blow. Whole tribes that had lived in the region for hundreds of years were wiped out or left in such a fragmentary condition that they joined with other tribes and lost the knowledge of their past identity. The marauding Navajos and Apaches, Athabascan-speaking tribes who had come out of the northwest into the southwest in the 13th century, were at first less affected by the Spanish invasion. These people were drifting and remote, and there was apparently nothing in the desert and mountain country they occupied that anybody else wanted at that time. Athabascan culture was influenced by Spanish horses, burros, and sheep, but not by their religion and culture. This explains why so much more of their religion, ritual, and mythology has survived to this day. Many other tribes incorporated elements of Christianity. A few fortunate isolated. Research 223. Tribes had less direct contact with Europeans and could preserve their sacred myths into the 20th century. As white settlement continued to move into the more remote areas, often attracted by gold and other valuables, tribe was pushed against tribe, with resulting outbreaks of hostility between them. There were some traditional enemies, for example, the Dakotas, Sioux Nation and their neighbors, but they were in the minority. A prime example of traditional animosity between Native Americans' cultures would be the Navajos and the Hopi tribes, which was not only instigated by the U.S. politicians hungry for their land, but which is still perpetuated to this day. Some groups were exterminated, some merged for protection with stronger tribes. But there were always some tribes, down-facing all enemies, who have maintained their identities even to the present day. No one at the time paid any attention to the Native American religion, art, music or ritual except to label it pagan and primitive. The U.S. government created a Bureau of Indian Affairs, BIA, to protect the Indians. Yet at the same time white men continued to urge Native Americans to throw the old ways aside, and to replace them with faiths and skills of the Euro-Americans. These culture traits of the invaders, because they were of European origin, must be superior to those of the Aborigines. Many shamans were probably killed during these times before they could pass on the treasured legends of the tribes. When things settled down again after the relocation of tribes onto reservations, ceremonies and rituals and legends became once again an integral part of their life, and these things were revived. Because the records were not preserved in writing, but were kept orally, there were undoubtedly many missing pieces. During this time, much Native American knowledge and literature was lost and gone forever. Then a curious thing happened. Curiosity about the Native Americans was aroused among the intellectuals in the cities and universities in the eastern United States. For the first time, in the 1830s, scholars realized that these Indians were people. They were human beings. Surely they must have beliefs and knowledge. As 224. The legend of Stark Rush, other peoples had. Certain scientists and early anthropologists became concerned that a unique way of life might disappear before it could be studied. These people were a small minority and they went to live among the Native Americans to learn about these vanishing species, and began recording their findings. Most of my research came from their data because it was the most thorough. But by the time of their studies in the late 1880s and early 1900s, the damage had already been done. Their work was highly scholarly and professional, but was complicated by the fact that, since the majority of the Native Americans lacked writing, most of the lore was verbal. These men often had to laboriously wind their way through frenetic jungles, trying to record half-forgotten tales, told in bits and pieces by men and women grown too old to remember the myth's ramifications, entirety, or context. What we now know of Native American religions, myths, and legends, was recorded by these men of intellectual curiosity because it was curious. But it is fragmentary at best and much slipped by them unrecorded. The researches of the late 19th century are invaluable to present-day scholars. Yet much of what was recorded early in this century still remains in musty field notebooks, untranscribed. Much to my disappointment, the Eskimos have little tradition that can be considered old or to have been influenced by anything of the nature of Tuin's story. The church's efforts caused the Eskimo to become secretive about practicing their religious rites in the vicinity of white men. Yet they all still believed implicitly in the power of the shamans and in the religious rites handed down by the elders. Their tribal stories and legends are mostly about the adventurous feats of their ancestors, dealing with survival against great odds in a hostile atmosphere, that is, the weather, animals, etc. They have an active belief in monsters, evil spirits and such strange tales, but these seem to have arisen from their extreme isolation and their fear of the hostility of their environment. In a general way, it may be concluded that the Eskimos are more interested in earthly matters than heavenly or celestial matters. One author thought it strange that there were not more tales trying to, research 225, explain the absence of the sun from the sky during long periods in the Arctic, the amazing display of northern lights, or the sudden and furious Arctic storms. There are a number of Eskimo stories which deal with the stars and the sun and moon, because astronomy was most important for a hunting people. People who live close to nature are keen observers of the stars. Their position in the sky told them of the time of the migration of the caribou, or the appearance of the fish. They also told them when the freeze-up of the long winter nights was coming, and when the ice would be breaking up in the spring. The struggle for existence was not always successful, and whole tribes simply disappeared from history after an unsuccessful hunting season. The old tales are best known by certain old men who entertain their fellow villagers by repeating them before the assembled people. Some of the tales are long, occupying several successive evenings in their recital, and sometimes require two narrators. The tales are heard with pleasure over and over again, forming the unwritten lore upon which they draw for entertainment during the long winter evenings. In addition to the more important tales, which are the property of the men, there are many children's stories which the women relate. These are short, simple stories used for entertainment for themselves and children. The ancestral spirits as well as the supernatural powers of earth and sky are still implored to bring the animals to the hunter. The shamans were always a special group among all the North American cultures. I found more similarity to our story in the lore of other Native American tribes. I will attempt to coordinate it and trace the origins of their beliefs. It is obvious that many Native American traditions have changed through the evolution of several generations. The myths and stories have been embroidered and added to over a long period of time, to the point that it is difficult to know what the root story was. But in some there is the whisper of Tuin's people, and I am confident their long-protected stories have not totally disappeared, but have undergone major distortion and incorporation. The links between the historic past and the present through 226. The legend of Stark Rush, myth are strong. Legends, of course, vary according to a people's way of life, the geography and the climate in which they live, the food they eat and the way they obtain it. The nomadic buffalo hunters of the plains tell stories very different from those of eastern forest dwellers. To the southwestern planters and harvesters, the coming of corn and the changing of seasons are of primal concern, while people of the northwest who make their living from the sea fill their tales with ocean monsters, swift harpooners, and powerful boat builders. All tribes have spun narratives as well for the features of the landscape, how this river came to be, when these mountains were formed, how our coastline was carved. Rather than being self-contained units, the legends are often incomplete episodes in a progression that goes back deep into a tribe's traditions. Legends as well as cultures overlap and influence each other, not only when people of different tribes live in adjacent territory, but even when they encounter each other through migration or trade over long distances. Artifacts have been found that originally came from another tribe or culture many hundred or thousand miles distant.